Welcome to Buy Sci-Fi Bite-Sized Finance. I'm Kelly Brothers. I'll be your host, serving up some of the most succulent stories from our region about people, places, and things that impact our community and your financial well-being. I'm sure there will even be a few tasty surprises here and there when the recipe is right. Our goal is to have you learn, think, even laugh a little bit, all calorie-free. I know you'll enjoy what we're delivering right to your kitchen table or dining room or, sir, will you be eating in your car? Wherever you choose to listen. Welcome back. Another edition of Bite-Sized Finance, brought to you by Cap Trust. I'm Kelly Brothers. Always good to be with you to speak with some of the people who are moving business in and around the greater Sacramento area. And today we have a great guest, someone you may not know anything about, but he has some interesting stories. And for many of you, might be a great resource in future years. We will see. His name is Randy Hendershot. He's with Evolution Advisors, or he is Evolution Advisors, really. But he specializes in the buying and selling and valuation of businesses. So you have a business and your son or daughter just ain't cut from the same cloth, or maybe that was never the plan in the first place and you need to sell that business, or you're stuck in a dead-end corporate job. You've gone as high as you can go and you want to try, set out and do your own thing in your own way with your own business. How do you go about buying a business in that case? And Randy, a little bit of an expert in both the buying, the selling, the valuation of business, and it's an important task. And to be honest with you, until I met Randy, I didn't know anyone who did this. People just somehow figured it out via private equity or something else. But Randy Hendershot is our guest. And Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. Let's start with your history. I mean, in order to do what you do, you had to have some other experiences first, I assume, right? So give us a quick synopsis of where you grew up and went to school and then what you did.
Very good. Well, thank you, Kelly. Yes, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm a St. Louis guy. So born in Colorado, but grew up in the Midwest. Did my schooling there and then ended up working with a large rent-a-car company, Enterprise Rent-a-Car there. Bounced around the country with different promotions, started out in St. Louis, ended up coming to Sacramento. In fact, I got to help open up a lot of the Enterprise locations here in the Sacramento area, then ended up getting promoted up to a spot up in Washington State. I was on the east side of the state and then also on the west side of the state, and then got promoted back down to Sacramento. In 2001, I was a regional vice president at that point in time. I had 45 locations and about 350 employees and all kind of the fun stuff that comes with that. Great experience. I was with them till finished up 24 years, ended in 2011. They retired me. Then there was two regions, one here in Roseville, Sacramento area, and one down in Fresno. They combined them into one. So ended up stepping away from that. 2011, started my own business, got into that for a while. It was a personal driver business. At the same time, ours is a little different model, but same time that Uber started. So I think they won that battle. We didn't figure ours could scale like they did. But anyway, was ended up looking to buy a business, Kelly. And then I was talking to CPAs and estate planning attorneys and brokers, kind of find a business I could buy. And when I was talking to the brokers, I wasn't super impressed with kind of the broker community, but I ran into someone I was very impressed with. His name is Roy, and he's been my mentor ever since. And I started up my own firm. So I started up my own firm. It's my 11th year doing what I'm doing. It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy getting to meet business owners and kind of see how they've made a living doing what they're doing. It's a lot of fun.
So you handle both the buy side and the sell side. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. We typically will start out on the sell side for the most part. We do both on the buy side too. And then we'll do our advertising, marketing, bring in the buyers, and then work. A lot of times we'll end up working with both. The size we work with are businesses about $1 million in revenue up to $25 million, just give you kind of a size wise. So we're not doing the $50-100 million deals, but that's the size we're working with. So again, we end up usually starting with sell side and then we end up working with both. Or sometimes we'll work with the buyer if they found a business they want to target.
And what's your geography? Do you handle mostly Northern California or do you go well beyond that?
Good question. Yes, we're governed by the Department of Real Estate. So I've got a California real estate broker's license. So we're licensed here in California, but mostly Northern here, you know, here our office is here in Roseville area, Sacramento. But so we do Sacramento, the Bay Area, a lot over in the Bay, up to Chico, gone down to Fresno, but mostly Northern California.
And why do you have to have a real estate license?
Good question. There's a lot of the same functions that kind of come into play as far as representation, agency, things like that. So that's just where the state tucked the business brokers is into that arena. So I got to learn about gable roofs and closet space that I'm probably not going to use again. But a lot of the other legal activities kind of apply the same.
So you, let's say you start with the sell side, and is this mostly through referral? You just meet someone who has been doing it 15, 20, 25 years and is just ready to move on, or at least they come to you and say, if I wanted to move on in 2 or 3 years, what would that look like? Is that the way it starts?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, most of the business that I do is referrals. So either past clients referring their friends and family, or I work a lot with advisors like yourself, Kelly, with CPAs, estate planning attorneys, basically centers of influence, you know, folks that are working, you know, with business owners. That's pretty much where all of our business comes from.
And so you're working with the business owner, you know, we're going to run through the numbers and the valuation and all that, but take me through the emotional piece of it. It's got to be hard for some of these people to give up something they gave birth to, right? And shepherded through however many years.
100%. Yes. It's a huge decision. And when I'm initially, this is just my approach, Kelly, when I'm initially talking to a business owner, I'm really kind of trying to talk them out of selling. It's like you need to be 100% motivated to want to sell. And sometimes if they're not, that's fine. I tell them, you'll know when you are. Well, let's talk about the different aspects about it, but you'll know when you are ready to go. But it's a huge decision. It's also one that I find they need to figure out. I call it chapter three, Kelly, that, you know, you've got, I call it chapter one is kind of your childhood. Chapter two is your career. And then to me, you know, chapter three is when you're ready to retire. What are you going to do in chapter three? And sometimes that they don't really have an answer for that. And I think that's a very important piece. I mean, you need to have kind of an idea of where you're going to go. My little joke on that is, you know, because I hear this all the time, after your 6-month RV trip around the US, then what? Because you have to have something that fills, you know, your identity, your structure, and your purpose. So what's going to fill that? And that's a big part of it, too.
No, we deal with that a lot, too. Mm-hmm. And In general, I will just say men have no clue as to, you know, the contribution of their work to their own self-esteem, self-worth. I mean, I don't think they understand that until it's gone in many cases. And that's a hard thing to have to deal with. So with that in mind, you know, how many of these transactions that you do, how many of them are like, hey, Friday, I'm handing you the keys and away we go. And how many of them have some sort of a 2, 3, 5 year earn out or some sort of arrangement like that, where the prior owner stays involved to one degree or another?
Most of the time, we don't end up going the earnout range. Usually the earnout side is when there's a pretty decent gap between what the seller's looking for and what the buyer's looking for, and you're trying to bridge that gap. Most of the time, there's a transition process that's agreed to. Naturally, it's a negotiated time span. And it's 3, 6, 12 months, probably closer to 6 to 12 months, sometimes longer. There's usually a heavy transition, you know, with the training and kind of, you know, passing over all of what they've learned for that. Let's say a 6-month period. Then a lot of times we'll have negotiated in a lifeline, you know, kind of like, well, I've got you for X amount of hours per week for this period of time. But then after that, I'd love to be able to reach out to you via Zoom or via phone for, you know, X amount of hours per month for another period of time, just so they've got a lifeline to reach out to. So, but all that is negotiated down to the black and white. There's no question of, hey, I'm just going to help you. There's, you know, detail down to who's doing what and what's being expected.
And when that ends.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Are there usually non-competes built in as well?
Every time. Yeah, 100% every time. And for all the right reasons, right? If you're, you know, if you own a business and you sell it, you're as a buyer, you're not going to want them to run down the street and open up another one. So every time there's a non-compete and we have to allocate a certain amount of funds to that, but there, as far as the price breakdown, but yeah, 100% every time.
So I take it you're not a CPA, you're not an attorney, so you're just one member of a team usually advising a seller in this case, right?
Exactly, and that's an extremely important point, Kelly. The sellers on the sell side, they need to have a team, they need to have a CPA and someone that's familiar with the transaction side, not just the tax return side, and then an attorney as well, and the same thing, someone that deals with the transaction side of the law, not just, you know, another side of it, but they need to have a team 100%. And we're part of it. And we're kind of as a business broker, we're really kind of the quarterback. We kind of really work between all the team and kind of make sure we're all going the same direction and kind of help get us together when need be.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that would get that you need that. What I can only imagine what this answer would be, but what is the average gap in time between when you first meet someone who is looking at potentially exploring the idea of a sale and when you stop working with that person? How is it? I mean, I would assume that's multiple years.
Yeah, it can be. It really depends on where they are with their decision process, right? Are they just kicking tires, kind of thinking about it, or are they real serious? But I tell folks when they ask, okay, Randy, well, how long will it take to sell a business? So if they say go, and we start the listing process, the average is 6 to 9 months, but I tell them to plan on 6 to 12. But that's from when we say go. From my initial conversation, it could be years. In fact, we just closed on a food processing company in January, and they had a wholesale side and a retail side. And my first conversation with him was in July of 2017. And wow. We did evaluation then, which I think, well, I'm sure we'll get into that, but we did evaluation then, and we kept in touch. And every other year, we did another evaluation until he was ready to go. But he also was a good student, and he was listening to ideas and things to think about how to kind of position himself once we got there. And it made a big difference, because when we got there, his business was in a very good spot, and we had a lot of good activity. But that was a long one, but that's not atypical. That's pretty normal. Ideally, Kelly, they should be planning 3 to 5 years out. They really should be planning 3 to 5 years out.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm sure many times they come to you, and really what you're doing is saying, here are the 3 or 4 things I would do if I were you, if I were going to sell this in 2 years or 3 years. Here's what you need to clean up. Here's the way you need to look at this. If you want, you know, the maximum optimal value for your business, here's what I would do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all part of that valuation process. My approach is, let's just go through the valuation process and see what you've got. And the more that we're learning, or as we learn more about your business, I can do just that. Kind of share with you ideas, thoughts. And those aren't things that, as a broker, I would do, you know, kind of help them through. But I've got trusted advisors in my network that I can kind of introduce them to if they don't have them, to help them kind of work on those items. But that's a huge piece at the beginning, is let's see what you got. Let's just see what you've got. When we do the valuation process, I tell them, you know, there's two things that's going to come out of it. The first one's, you know, the most obvious, the most likely listing price. But to me, the second one, that's the most important, is why. In determining why is it worth what it's worth. There's a lot of levers you can pull on to take value up, and some that will, you know, pull the value down. But as they kind of learn those items, then they can decide if they've got enough fuel in the tank to work on those things over a period of years before they exit.
Great. We are going to talk about this with Randy Hendershot. He's with Evolution Advisors. He buys and sells businesses all the time, or advises on the purchase or the sale of a business. So we're going to talk, and we're going to dive into some case studies as well of people who have sold, or people who have left the corporate world and gone out and bought something to create a whole new life for them and their families. It's not just this liquidity event of selling a business. In many cases, it's the start of something great, which can be measured either monetarily or in terms of lifestyle. Either one. Kelly Brothers with you, Bite Size Finance, back after this.
Hello, this is Will Gabry, and I am an advisor with CapTrust here in the Sacramento area. I'm a busy father of 4, and life comes at us fast. As my 20th year of advising clients begin, I want to take a moment and reflect on why I'm thankful to have chosen this profession. Quite simply, I get to help people. I work with clients on wealth management, income, and taxes, to name a few. But even more importantly, I get to be part of great relationships. People often interact with an advisor during life events, and I've been with clients through difficulties and joyous times. Conversations, connections, and trust built mean more to me than anything else. Working at a nationwide firm like CapTrust gives me a team of professionals to assist in all aspects of financial advising. Being part of our local office means great care and service to our clients. If you would like to start a discussion and see how we can partner with you, you can find me at CapTrust.com. Look for Will Gabry, G-A-B-R-I. Thank you.
I'm Father Christopher Calderon. I serve as the president of Cristo Rey High School, a work-study school. As we partner with businesses all throughout Sacramento, we want to take a moment to hear from our students as they share their experience.
Hi, my name is Ramon Corona, and I work for McCarthy Building Companies, and I've enjoyed the progression that I've had in learning the entire industry and getting a taste of each of the departments. Thank you, McCarthy Building Companies, for sponsoring our school.
Thank you again to all our work-study sponsors for believing in and being a part of the work we do.
Kelly Brothers back with you, Bite Size Finance, of course, wherever you find your podcasts. And also, every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, KFBK, you will find these conversations with various folks who are moving business in and around the greater Sacramento area. Our guest today, Randy Hendershot, Evolution Advisors. He's kind of an expert in selling your business, in going out and buying a business. Randy, let's talk about the buy side for just a minute, because I love some of the stories you were telling me about people who are just, who maybe are very successful in what they're doing. Maybe it's in technology, or maybe it's with a rental car firm. Who knows? But they're very successful, but they want to do their own thing. They have their own ideas and they want to take a shot. So just give me one or two little case studies of people who have come to you in recent years and really wanted to kind of redefine who they were and what they did.
You know, it's a fun process, because as you mentioned, Kelly, it's an ending and a beginning, right? You've got the seller ending, and you got a lot of times it's a new, completely new adventure for a buyer. And it's nerving, emotional, but a lot of fun and a lot of excitement. I've had a few. So we're located in the Sacramento area. There's a lot of Bay Area folks that are kind of heading this direction for whatever reason. You know, their spouse, he or she, can now work from home. So maybe they can be more mobile, more flexible. So we're seeing, we got a kind of a name for some of these folks. It's kind of we call them kind of corporate refugees. You know, maybe they got let go from their corporate position. You know, during COVID, we saw that. During the recession, that was the case as well. But they're looking for a new adventure and coming, you know, east. And I've had a few of them. In fact, we had one kind of a funny little story, a manufacturing company up in the foothills and family from the Bay Area coming over. And we ended up going through the process, but as they were kind of going through their due diligence and kind of learning the area and learning about the business, it was a funny comment about, you know, the buyer was actually in a local coffee shop talking to the folks there, and he made a comment to me. He's like, wow, everybody here is so friendly. It's really nice. So just kind of a whole new environment for them to be in is a lot of fun. We also recently had a construction business we sold. We just closed on this a little while ago. A construction business, and to your point, the buyer ended up being someone working for another company and decided to take a leap and go out on his own. And that's a big decision. I mean, if you've only done the corporate side of things, that's a big step. A lot of work to go through the whole process. You know, he had to set up his own entity, all kinds of different aspects you have to do to on a buy side to put everything together to have your own business. So just think of starting your business from scratch. Even though you're buying one, you're still starting an entity from scratch typically. But we just closed on that one recently, and I know he's extremely excited. Big step, but now he's his own boss, and that's a big decision to make.
You know, I don't even know when if you're in that position and you want to go buy a business, how easy or how difficult is it to get financing to actually put down the money to buy the business and get going? Is that a tough sell with local banks?
It can be. We've got a number of banks that we work with that specialize in just that. So when I'm working with a buyer, the idea is to have them get pre-qualified ahead of time for a couple of reasons. One, they can find out more about what would be a good size, you know, what could they work, what could they qualify for. But also the bank's going to have, you know, some key areas they're looking at too. And a lot of it's going to be, you know, your experience. Does your experience transfer over to this business? And sometimes it's a direct hit, but other times it might not be. So having a bank that will kind of guide you along and kind of say, okay, these are the industries we feel that you could do okay in, that helps, so you're not wasting your time spending, you know, time talking to other opportunities that might not even be financeable.
And when you, I assume when you have a buyer that you're working with, it's up, you're the one now telling him, you know what, that's a good business, but it's not worth that. You're having to do the valuation on the buy side, right?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on how we're set up. If we're representing the buyer only or not, a lot of times we'll ask them, they need to rely on advisors, you know, maybe get an evaluation done on their own. If they're getting financing done, then the bank's going to have them do an evaluation anyway. So the buyer will pay for it, but the bank will use one of their vendors, but so there'll be evaluation done. So then they can determine, you know, what it's, if it's falling in line. But as we know, at the end of the day, a business sells for what a seller is willing to sell it for and a buyer is willing to pay for it. So it really depends on what they're comfortable with. And that's what I tell them. Like, you've got to be comfortable with whatever you're looking at, your debt service, your cash flow. Are you comfortable? The only way a deal gets done is when it works for both. If it's lopsided, we will not get across the finish line. So we've got to figure out if there's a middle ground that works for both.
Yeah, no, I can imagine, especially especially when, because as many of our listeners will know, there are a lot of different ways to value a business. For your business will have assets, but you also have cash flows, and then you have, you know, you have certain things that will move those cash flows over the next 5 to 10 years, kind of secular trends. So you got to take all of that into account, and the way you value the business may be very different than the way a bank values a business, right?
Yeah, it'll go down to cash. I mean, that's going to be the biggest one from a bank's perspective. You know, kind of keeping it simple, they want to get paid back. So they're looking at, okay, what's the cash flow for the business? What's the debt service that would be on the loan? And then what does the buyer need to survive, to live, to make a living off the business? And do those all make sense? Then you look at the other items, you know, is the buyer's experience applicable? Industry trends, you know, are those good or bad? Future growth opportunities, all that comes in. But the first part is going to be the numbers. Do they make sense?
Especially, I just wrote our intro for our quarterly newsletter, and I wrote it all about, you know, the gold that is recurring revenue and subscriptions, and how subscriptions have completely run amok to the point where, you know, BMW recently advertised a subscription where you could have heated seats if you paid a subscription. So they put the feature in the car, and then they digitally are able to figure out, or they make the decision as to whether or not you have access to that feature based on a subscription. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I will say that because of a huge outcry from people, they relented and then said, okay, you can have heated seats whenever you want them because you paid for the seat heaters. But subscriptions, I don't think most people understand the power of recurring business, the power of waking up on January 1st, and you already have this incredible set of recurring revenue kind of ready to go. So I assume that's a big part of valuation too, right?
It is. No, that's huge. And there aren't as many recurring revenue businesses out there. That is a highly sought after business, one that I get requests from buyers all the time. But there aren't as many of those. There's more that are kind of project based, where you know do a project, whatever that might be. Landscaping, photography, you know, like the kind of example I've used before is like a landscaping service company that does, whether it's residential or commercial, where you've got, you know, repeated accounts over and over and over, where you're there week in, week out, versus landscape project. Do a project, find the next one. Obviously, the risk is a lot lower on the recurring and the values are higher, but it's also more desirable from the buy side too.
Right. Before we wrap up this section, tell me about I remember you telling me about I think it was a corporate refugee from the tech world who was buying a hardware store. It almost sounded to me like the beginning of a Hallmark movie. Someone leaving Silicon Valley and moving to the mountains to sell hardware. But you get those requests, right?
Yeah, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, we had a couple that had actually lived in a smaller town and moved to the Bay and lived in the bigger town. And they were just like, you know what? We would love to have the next chapter be back to the smaller town. So they had experienced it before, which was super helpful, obviously. But that was the big motivator. And they had experience kind of with some retail in the background. So they had some retail, they had some that type, that industry experience, not directly in hardware, but it tied it enough to where it made sense for the bank and it made sense for them.
And Randy, you're in this now for a number of years. Do you ever hear from these people 5 years on saying, you know, best decision we ever made, or, oh boy, if we had known? I mean, do you hear from them later on?
Yeah, we do. And it's usually some fun stories, especially for the entrepreneur or the employees that have made the jump to entrepreneurship. That's a big decision. And it's different. It's a lot different for the folks that have made that. And then they finally, you know, realize they've got their dream. That's always fun to talk to them about, for sure.
Our guest on Bite Size Finance, Randy Hendershot, Evolution Advisors, on how to buy, sell, value your business, or buy a new business if you want to get going. It's a great topic, and we have more time after this short break. You're listening to Bite Size Finance.
Hello, this is Scott Thomas with CapTrust in our Sacramento office. I specialize in working with local nonprofits and associations. Annually, we survey private and public nonprofit organizations across the country to better understand challenges they see in today's environment. In our more recent survey, we heard concerns about proper board governance, mission-aligned investment, and how to implement alternative investments. If you would like a copy of the survey or to discuss your organization, look me up, Scott Thomas at CapTrust.com.
Kelly Brothers, host of this radio show, but also an advisor at CapTrust. If you're looking for independent fiduciary advice, give us a call. We have offices in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. CapTrust.com is where you'll find us. Kelly Brothers back again. Bite Size Finance brought to you by CapTrust. My guest today on Bite Size Finance, and thank you to everyone who listens in every week. Again, we're at wherever you find your favorite podcast. It drops every Friday or 3 p.m. on KFBK and KSTE every Sunday afternoon. And once again, we're thrilled you listen. Thanks so much. Talking today with Randy Hendershot, Evolution Advisors, and, you know, succession planning. Randy, by the way, for those of you just tuning in, Randy is an expert on how to buy, sell, value a business. We need to talk about the fact, Randy, that a lot of business owners don't do a good job of understanding the value of their business and where they, and have a succession plan in place. Because how many times has it happened where a life event happens, an illness, a heart attack, a car accident, that's, or, and it could be to you or your spouse, and suddenly you're a caregiver as well as trying to run a business. But one of those life events happens, and now it's a forced sale. Now you've lost your leverage. Now it's not worth what you thought it was worth. And maybe you didn't have any clue what it was worth to begin with, but that's why succession planning is so very, very important. Correct?
I couldn't agree more. In a perfect world, Kelly, an owner would have at least 3 to 5 years of planning time. More is better, but at least 3 to 5 years. The reason being is if you start your plan and you kind of set your goals, there may need to be certain things you need to do to your business to make it sellable and or increase the value. And you're going to need some runway to do that. Thinking like it's, for example, if the owner is a big part of their business, I mean, they're the one that's really dealing with most of the customers, they're dealing with most of the employees. Well, it's kind of counterintuitive to think about it, but when you're exiting a business, the less an owner is doing, the better. At least from the buyer's standpoint, right? Because they're looking at risk. The more risk they see after the transition, meaning if the seller is very involved, very engaged in the business, when they leave, what's going to happen when the seller is not there anymore? So if the seller is doing less, meaning they're doing more work on the business than in, that's a much better scenario value-wise and also sellability-wise. The buyer pool is much bigger for buyers looking for those types of businesses versus buyers that are looking for one where they need to work in it, you know, full time in the business every day. So for that point, let's say that you're making that decision. You know what? I don't have a GM. I don't really have that management team in place, but I want to start that process. Well, that's going to take some time. You got to find the right people and get the systems and processes in place. But probably the next part to think about is there needs to be some marinating time. You know, if you brought on a new GM, a buyer is going to want to see some history there. You know, if you've got a new team in place and the seller is doing less, at least a year, if not more, 2-3 years would be better to say that, hey, this system is working and here's the rewards we have from that. If there's a change that's short term in nature, buyers are just going to be concerned about that to whether that's really going to stick or not. So that's one of the reasons, again, having 3 to 5 years. So if you're making changes, you've got some time to do that. If you have a health event, you obviously you're not going to have time. So that makes it much tougher.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you know, I don't mind telling folks, and I've told folks, because we were a small registered investment advisory firm and we joined forces with Cap Trust back in 21. But one of the reasons was we were, Mike and Alex and I were three principals who were trying to basically run the business with a 90-minute meeting every Thursday morning. And suddenly we looked up and we had 40 employees and we were managing over $3 billion. And we thought, we don't even know the risks we're taking on. You know, we have to look at how do we, and we also, quite frankly, we had very little success in bringing in professional management to kind of run things. So it was a natural decision. But the great part for us in this transaction was we got to do what we got into the business to do. We wanted to be advisors. That's why we got into it. And the running of the business, you know, it was fun to grow the business. It was not fun to run the business. And so we get to still do that. But at the same time, we now have the business won't fall down if something happens to one of us. And we're all still working full time and all planned to do so for a long time. But it is, you know, it kind of takes a lot of soul searching to figure out when the right time is to kind of bring on that outside partner or to just do a sale or do whatever you want to do. The good news for us, which you're sellers may not have is we got to basically sell a chunk of the business, but still keep doing the part of the business we like the best. So it was kind of a win-win for us. And like you said, most of your guys are gone within a year, right? They're on to something new.
Yeah, no, a true story. And most of them are done. They're kind of like, I'm done, Randy. I don't want to be on here another 2 or 3 years. So, but to your point, Kelly, you planned ahead, which is great. In my world, you're in a small percentage. Not many folks do that planning ahead. So I make a living when businesses sell, but I really want to, I always talk to folks like you and CPAs and estate planning attorneys and other folks like that, that just ask your owners, do you have a plan? Just get them thinking about it because they got to start. And the more lead time they have, the better.
Yeah, boy. And you know, what a disservice you're doing to your spouse if you don't have a plan. Because, boy, if something happens to you, it is a mess. Mm-hmm. And you will get nowhere near what you thought the business was worth because you were the one driving the business. So you're right. It's an important thing. When you prepare a business for sale, Randy, I mean, or when you have a successful situation and you're preparing a business for sale, how many offers or how many buyers are in the pool usually?
That's a good question. So more the better, the simple answer is, and that's our job. You really want to bring in as many buyers as you can. And every business is a little bit different. Multiple offers is definitely the best way you want to go. And typically that's where we do land. And the reason being is they're all going to be different. And I have, you know, sometimes sellers will say, I want this price or that price. And I say, well, that's great, but we have to look at the whole picture. Like we were talking about earlier, there's much more to it than just the cash dollar amount. You know, the transition time, is there, you know, how's the financing going to work? Is there any seller carry? Is there an earnout or whatever those things might be? But we need to look at all these things, not just the price, and they're all going to be a little bit different too. And the buyers are different. So if of sellers, you know, most of them are looking to leave a legacy. So they have kind of a type of buyer that they like to see, and we're doing our best we can to find that type of buyer. Are they going to be a good fit with their team and with their customers and all that and carry on, you know, their culture that they've built? So the more the better, because they're all going to be a lot different.
Well, plus if they're a decent human being, they do care about their employees who help get them to where they are, right? Yep. So those employees will now be working for someone else, and that's important to know.
Exactly. No, that's a huge one. That's probably the biggest emotional part for a seller is, you know, departing from your team because they've helped you grow your business. That's a tough spot to be in. And just a kind of a sideline here to Kelly, it's kind of an interesting process for a seller because the best practice is for the employees not to know about the business being sold until the day of close because they get worried. And so a seller is kind of going through the process, not being able to kind of share with their team what they're doing, and they can feel guilty it's like, because, for all the right reasons, right? But it's the best thing for them because employees, if they do find out sooner, they can think that they're not going to be needed, but it's quite the opposite of that. You know, most buyers buying, they're buying the team. They're buying the success the team's put together, all the systems and processes and the talent, but that can not always feel like that when you're an employee. So for that reason, we want to wait till we get to closing time.
No, absolutely. What about just for a moment, touch on real estate. Do most of your, if you're selling a business and there's real estate involved, do most hold on to the real estate and become a landlord, or are most of your deals kind of lock, stock and barrel, the business and the real estate are being sold?
Yeah, a little bit of both. About 30% or so have the real estate owned by the seller. And it really depends on what their goals are. And that's what I ask. Whatever you want, we'll go do. If they want to be a landlord and collect coupons for a while, great. If they want to sell everything and kind of do something else with those funds, fine. We're licensed to do both. So, and on the buy side, their buyer pool is larger for folks that are looking for the real estate and the business. If you could, you know, pay yourself that lease amount versus paying someone else, that's very desirable. And the banks like that too. There's a nice piece of collateral that goes along with it. So if they're open to selling the real estate as well, that buyer pool can get even a little bit bigger.
That's great. Well, tell you what, we're going to take one more break. And when we come back though, I want to talk about, let's do some specific examples of the types of businesses where you've gone in, you know, 3 to 4 years ahead of sale and said, hey, here are the changes you should make and here are why. Let's talk about prepping a business for sale. And there are those people who say you should always be prepping for sale, whether you're planning to sell or not. That will lead you to think in a different way. And then there are those saying, no, to me, this is a 10 or 20 year deal. So I don't mind hiring an extra one or two people who don't make sense right now, but I know will 5 years down the line. So Let's talk about prepping for sale when we come back. Our guest once again, Randy Hendershot, Evolution Advisors, how to buy, sell, value a business. You are listening to Bite Size Finance with Kelly Brothers, brought to you by Cap Trust, right here, wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on KFPK and KSTE every Sunday afternoon.
For over 40 years, Drobny Law Offices has been assisting clients properly plan their estates and administer the estate of a loved one. With six attorneys and five paralegals practicing exclusively in estate planning and estate administration, Drobny Law Offices can assist in planning and administering estates from the modest to the largest and most complicated. The main offices are in Sacramento with satellite offices in Stockton, Modesto, San Ramon, Palo Alto, San Diego, and Reno. Unlike attorneys who charge by the tenth of the hour, estate plans are done for a flat fee, including not just the document production, but funding the trust, annual review letters, and routine amendments for life. The attorney-client relationship doesn't end with the execution of your documents. It's just the beginning. Estate planning is an ongoing process. Call 916-419-2100 for a free initial consultation. Drobny Law Offices, your attorneys for life. DrobnyLaw.com.
Do you have a financial plan for your pets? Protecting your loved ones, both two- and four-legged, is important, and the Sacramento SPCA can help. Join us for a complimentary estate planning seminar and learn how you can provide for your family and your pets while also creating a lifeline for animals in need. Visit sspca.org/estate to view seminar dates and secure your spot for one of our upcoming virtual sessions. That's sspca.org/estate.
Hello, this is Marcel Plumpto with Cap Trust in our Roseville office. I specialize in providing retirement plan advisory services to corporate fiduciaries. While we focus on many areas such as investment management and vendor oversight, it's our dedication to working closely with participants that drives my passion for the industry. Without a high level of engagement between advisors and participants, even well-designed retirement plans can fall short of their objectives. Should you have any questions on your retirement plan, please reach out. MarcelPlumpto@CapTrust.com.
Back again, Bite Size Finance. Kelly Brothers, brought to you by Cap Trust. Of course, at Cap Trust, we help a lot of business owners not only manage through a transition like this, figure out what they're going to do with that liquidity, figure out how much can be invested for the long term versus handling kind of their ongoing lifestyle needs. Not to mention, while they own the business, we do an awful lot of work with their retirement plans and trying to figure out how much money can be put away pre-tax to benefit you and your family later on. So we do a lot of this, and we're thrilled to work with people like Randy. Randy Hendershot, Evolution Advisors. Let's talk, Randy, about prepping a business for sale. Let's say for whatever reason you woke up today and you just thought, you know what, 3 years from now, I don't want to be doing this. Give us a few examples of businesses where you've made suggestions and they have changed the way they do certain things in order to optimize or maximize the potential value of that business.
Very good. And there's a lot of levers to pull on, Kelly, on what can make a difference in your business value. And I think that's probably the key thing, I think, is understanding when you do get a valuation done is understanding all those different levers. And rightfully so, you know, owners typically gravitate towards the bottom line, as that's the big driver. And it is. But there's a lot of other drivers that do make a lot of difference. Again, it goes back to risk. Like we've been saying, the more risk a buyer sees looking in, the less the offers and vice versa. But I had one, which we touched on a little bit earlier, a food processing business that had a wholesale component and also a retail component. So they process food, but they had a number of wholesale customers. And we talked, this is the one we chatted up with, you know, back in 2017. But anyway, brought up to him, he's asking me the same questions you're asking, you know, which are some things I should be thinking about? And one of them I mentioned to him was customer concentration. And this has happened often where you've got a business doing quite well and they've got a lot of customers, but maybe one customer is a large percentage of their revenue. And that's a lot of risk. So we talked about that. And I said, you know, the industry standard is if you want to have at least, you know, no customer more than 15% is the goal. But if you can get them like to 10%, that's probably the better place. And he listened. And so he had all of his wholesale customers lined up and he was doing a lot of big name companies you would know. We had them all lined up and he had it all set up to where none of them got above 10%. None of them. And when we got to the due diligence part with the buyer, naturally for them, that was a major plus because they didn't have any one customer at a high level. And I've got another scenario where I had a commercial HVAC customer or a client a long time ago, and they had, 100 plus clients, but one of them was 40% of their revenue. That's a lot of risk. So having that wherewithal ahead of time to be aware of it, at least now you've got some time to do something about it. Easy for us to say, hey, go diversify your business, but at least if you've got some runway, you can have some impact on it.
And the other thing you'd mentioned to me prior was financials, that sometimes you're surprised. I think you used the term shock at how some companies are still using the ledger and pencil, and or maybe they have a spreadsheet going, but they really have not taken advantage of some of the advanced analytics that are in place today that move business every day. Talk about that.
Yeah, and that's, I think that one to me is an easy one. Not that it's easy, but it's the fun part about that is, as I'm having a conversation with a seller, a business owner, and their financials are, they're okay. They're really kind of in place to get a tax return done. They're not in place to help them make decisions, with a metric dashboard with key performance indicators. They don't have that set up. But from a buyer's lens looking in, if they're looking in and the financials don't quite make sense, they're going to move on to another business. I mean, they're looking at multiple businesses. So having them in order is extremely important. And if you have decision points where you can actually make decisions on your business, even the better. But back to my point of it being somewhat easy is, it's not something you as an owner have to put on your plate, meaning it takes you more time. You just got to hire someone and you got to find the right person. It's going to cost you some nickels, but the return you're going to get on that is, in my book, tenfold. So having a good strategy type, CPA, CFO, outsourced CPO, some kind of professional like that will pay dividends in the long run.
But I would think, Randy, yes, if the financials aren't making sense, I could see buyers saying, we'll pass and move on to something else. But if the financials make sense on a quarterly or annual basis, but they just have not in any way upgraded their systems for keeping track and the daily analytics or the key performance indicators, I would see that as, or I could see that a buyer might look in and say, boy, we can really improve.
Yep.
Our sales performance if we just add on this layer that this guy isn't for whatever reason, right? I mean, so they could see underutilized value there as well.
Correct. No, I would agree with that 100%. Yeah. So it's kind of either way. So if you have it, great. There's value there because the buyer can really understand what you're doing. But vice versa, and this is pretty common, especially with folks that are retiring. There, a lot of them have not gravitated or taken advantage of the tech side of things. So buyers looking in are saying, hey, if I can bring, and there's a lot of apps out there and different technology that can really make a big difference. They're looking at it from that perspective. I agree 100%.
So Randy, I guess if someone owned a business and was thinking, in 10 years, I really don't want to be doing this, but not for a while, but still it would be worth their while to take you out for a cup of coffee and at least start to pick your brain and begin the conversation. Correct? How do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, that's a great point, Kelly. And I do that all the time. I sit down with folks like yourself, other professionals, and we'll sit down with the business owner and roundtable and talk about the process. They don't know. Pretty much all the folks we work with, they're doing it one time. They're not flipping businesses over and over and over. So I'd love to help educate them on how the process works. How do you find the buyers? How do you market a business? What should I be thinking about? Happy to do that. We've got a website, evobizsales.com. My email is at randy@evobizsales.com. And our phone number is 916-993-5433.
And Randy, let's flip to the buy side now. Give me some, because I've never looked at this. Where do you go? Let's say you're someone and you're looking to become a corporate refugee and you want to, what are the best sites to go to kind of shake the tree a little bit and see what's out there in terms of being up for sale currently as a business? Where do you go?
There's a lot of sites. BizBuySell is the biggest one. There's BizQuest, BizBen, Business for Sale. I would just Google Business for Sale and see what comes up with. But BizBuySell, if you're a broker that you're going to put a listing out there, for sure, in my book, you're going to put it on BizBuySell. So I would start there, BizBuySell.com. They are the largest out there, and they have the most listings. So I would start there.
Let's talk for a moment about your fees. How are you paid? How do you make money? Just give us a sense of how that works.
Yeah, we're paid with a success-based fee, meaning we get paid when a business sells. So think of, you know, selling a home or a commercial building that goes through escrow, same scenario. And at that point, we're not looking to engage a seller and let's go ahead and move forward. Let's just see, like I said before, let's just see what you got. Let's go through the process, see where things are landing. You might decide now's a good time. You might not. But whatever is best for you is best for us. So let's see what you got. We'll give you some flavors on what we think you could think about, and then you can decide what you want to do from there. But it depends on the size of the business.
And if the buyer is using someone like you, is that all inclusive there, or is that in on top?
Yeah, the sell side is typically paying the broker's commission. Yeah.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yep.
So it's in that way, it's kind of like residential real estate. The sell side picks up all the sales costs, so to speak. Okay.
Yep.
And typically, is that a split, or is that, you know, between the buyer and seller agent, or is that more on the sell side since you did the valuation, did a lot of the early footwork?
It depends on if there's another broker involved. Many times there's not, so we'll work with both. Depends if there's another broker involved. If there is, then we go through the split, but depends if there's another one involved.
Well, there's a lot more questions to be asked, and unfortunately, we only have 1 hour, so we're pretty much up against it. But again, Randy Hendershot, Evolution Advisors, give the website once again. Evo.
EvoBizSales.com. EVO.
EvoBizSales.com.
Yeah,
that's where you're going to find Randy.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, again, this is, Randy's a guy who's one of those guys that you just want to have a conversation with long before the day comes that it's time to sell. That's because what everyone's trying to avoid here is that forced sale for one reason or another, whether it's health or financial or divorce or something else that, where life gets in the way. You want to be having that discussion. You want to understand your business and its valuation, not just what you hear, not just what people who work for you tell you they think it's worth, but what it's really worth. And believe me, those valuations have changed dramatically over the last few years, some in a positive way and some in a not so positive way. Randy, can't thank you enough for your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it. A lot of fun.
All right. Great to talk with Randy again. This podcast is Bite Size Finance. Find it every week wherever you get your podcasts or every Sunday afternoon on KFBK and KSTE. One of the unsung heroes of Sacramento history, Greg Luckenbill, the man who went out and grabbed the Kings and brought them to Sacramento. His story on Bite Size Finance. Find it every week wherever you get your podcasts or every Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Buy Sci-Fi, Bite-Sized Finance. If you liked what we served up today, please give us your rating, subscribe, and by all means, share. Music for the show produced locally by Kitty O'Neill and her band, Skylar's Pool.
Under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, this podcast is defined as an advertisement and includes an uncompensated testimonial by a Cap Trust client. Please be advised that clients' experiences as described in this podcast do not necessarily represent the experience of other clients. The discussions and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and are subject to change without notice. This podcast is intended to be informational only. Nothing in this podcast constitutes a solicitation, investment advice, or recommendation to invest in any securities. Cap Trust Financial Advisors is an investment advisor registered under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. Cap Trust does not render legal advice. Thanks again for listening to Bite Sized Finance.
Kelly Brothers here for Cap Trust. We are fiduciaries. That's an interesting word. What does that mean? That means that legally we are obligated to put your best interests over our own. Non-fiduciaries don't have that same legal situation. They can sell you something as long as it's suitable, but they don't have to put you in the best thing for you over their best interest. In other words, they can't just sell you a nice annuity with a big fat commission for themselves, even if it's not the best thing for you. We are fiduciaries. We are proud to be fiduciaries. And let me say something too about price. I am always shocked by the fact that there are people who I know will scour the internet for the cheapest flight or the cheapest ticket to a ball game, but they have no idea what they are paying for their advisor. We tell you upfront in black and white, here's what you're paying for what you're getting. Cap Trust here in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom.